Welcome back to the Profit Your Knowledge podcast. Today's guest is Richard Weilman, and I have to say I'm very excited about this conversation because Richard has been in the game of entrepreneurship for quite some time, even when the internet was just really taking off in the beginning, and he has done a lot of cool stuff. He just actually launched a book about 100 proven ways to acquire and keep clients for life. So we'll be unpacking that content a lot today, but he also just has an amazing story of being an orphan at the age of 6 and then turning into, you know, the Richard Weilman that we have on the show today. But I don't want to tell the story. I want him to share it with you because he can explain it a lot better than I can. How are you doing today, Richard?
I'm doing fine, James. Thanks for the invitation. It's a blessing to be with you.
Absolutely. I'm excited for this. Just looking at your profile and like your online presence and everything, I was like, this guy's legit. This is going to be super fun. So always excited. And I'm really excited just to get to know you. So right off the bat, I always love to ask this question. Richard, what made you decide to be an entrepreneur instead of just working in a job, you know, for somebody else? What made you decide to like do your own thing? And how did you get into the knowledge space where you're sharing your knowledge, turning that into an income, kind of what you're doing today?
All right, so I'll be brief, but I was an orphan, as you mentioned. I lived in 19 foster homes, went to 11 different schools. When in the military, I was flipping burgers at a place called Whataburger, a part-time job when I was in the Navy. And I saw an ad in the paper that said, make $2,000 a week part-time. I was like, $2,000 a week? That's amazing. I went out there. This guy was selling cookware. That's how I became an entrepreneur. I started selling cookware door-to-door and then cemetery plots, family Bibles, encyclopedia, a lot of stuff. And so that really began my journey. I did go to work for a major company, Xerox, back in the day. And it was a corporate job. And I was getting, you know, I got 7 promotions in like 3 years. And everybody's like, you're on the fast track. I thought, no, this is no. So I just walked in and quit. And they were freaked out. And they said, what are you going to do? I said, I have no idea. I'm going to get to Wanted and find a sales job. So I started selling Deco rugs and dust mops to small businesses. I had a 63 Volkswagen and I had them all tied on there. And I'd drive around the strip malls and sell these people Deco rugs and dust mops. So that's how I really got on the roll, if you will. Then I was involved in the automotive business, as you know, and that was very entrepreneurial as well. We built one of the largest Rolls-Royce dealership networks in the United States. Wow. With general sales manager. And then I was the head of sales and marketing for the Robb Report when we founded that. And then people began to call me to speak. And I was like, for what? And they said, no, you figured out a way to market to the affluent people. This was before even the internet. We had fax machines. How exciting was that? So that's what got me going on the journey. That was in the mid-90s. And then, of course, when the internet came out in 2006, I was getting over 200 requests a year to speak. And I just couldn't do it. I could do it, but it got crazy. Then my first book came out, Opening Closed Doors. Well, then it was a runaway train. So I said, you know what? I got an answer. I'll go online and do coursework. So I did. And that was, we launched in the fall of 2008 with online learning. And we've had thousands of people enroll and we've gone through courses, but it was a real journey. So that's what got me into entrepreneurship, if you will. And I'll just say this in summary. The key thing about being an entrepreneur, you're in charge of your own destiny and your own success and your own direction. And I'm not saying a corporate job is a bad thing because I have a lot of dear clients of mine that are executives and advisors and all the other things in various corporate jobs. But the reality is, if you really want to be in control of your future, then you have to build it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because you said that, you know, I mean, you got into sales and that was the big thing. You were selling books, you sold a lot of things, cars. Yep. And it's like when people think of, you know, being a salesperson at a dealership, you work for someone else. But I think what you mentioned earlier is that with an entrepreneur and having the entrepreneurial mindset, like you create your own destiny. Because I have a friend, and I haven't talked to him in so long, but he was working at a Subaru dealership and he was one of the top reps. He was doing like 30 grand a month and all the other guys were struggling around him. But it's like, we all have the same opportunity. But he is just a better entrepreneur, knew how to create those opportunities and understood people and psychology and that sort of stuff, which is why he really excelled. So I feel like people think that, oh, you have to start your own business per se to be an entrepreneur, but it's really that entrepreneurial mindset that kind of separates us, right?
You're exactly right. In fact, when I got involved with Porsche, I was with Porsche Audi. It was a dealership owned by a German couple that was great. And, you know, everybody's just kind of going along. But I was like, look, I understand relationships drive revenue. Got it. I'm going to join the Porsche Club. I got involved in the Porsche Club, the Porsche Club Racing, et cetera. And we were the number one 9/11 sales organization in three states. And I had tremendous flow of prospects, not because we were giving cars away. It's because we proactively marketed the marketplace, built relationships, and those relationships generated activity. How's that? So if you're in a sales organization as part of a big company, the truth of the matter is that if you'll get out in the marketplace and really connect with people, you will start driving people to you because they'll become curious about that which it is that you can do for them. That's where people are today. People aren't interested in being convinced about anything. But if you can create curiosity and they want to know more, I don't know about you, James, but that's like a wonderful thing. When somebody says, tell me a little more about that. That's the same as back your truck up to the house. I'm ready to buy.
So I want to hear about that because that's so big, and I struggle with this for a long time. And like for me, for example, there's two statements or stories that are really great catalysts for me that I've just developed over the years. And the first one is how I made $4,000 in my first week of podcasting. Well, I've been podcasting for years, but I made 4 grand by making a simple shift. When I say that, people are like, wait a second. What are you talking about? You know, you made this, what's the shift? You know, they get all curious about it. The other one is where I was making thousands of dollars every month from YouTube when I only had 200 subscribers. And people are like, I monetize and I make $70 a month. How are you doing this? So those are things that have worked for me, but I want to hear your take, Richard, of what can people do to create that curiosity and conversation where it doesn't feel like we're kind of pushing things. It just kind of brings in interest into what we're doing.
Okay, well, there's several things I can mention there, but let's speak specifically to the curiosity issue. What happens in most sales organizations, we have been taught to convince, tell people about the product, the platform, the process, the procedure, and all of the detail. The challenge we have is we got a consumer that is less in love with the prospect and the product and the process, and they're a lot more in love with the outcome and the experience. I'll give you an example. Walmart, for years, tried to convince people with low prices every day, flatline sales, long turn of inventory. It was a disaster. Slow, the earnings are down. New CEO comes in now about 10 years ago and said, we're going to stop trying to convince people of anything. We're going to create curiosity. What we're going to do is say, what? Save money, live better. Everybody's like,
Results.
I wonder if I could save money and live better. Same store sales. That means people in the same proximity up. Revenue up, inventory turn doubly fat. So all of that is an indicator of what people are looking for. In any sales role, your objective is if somebody says, "What do you do, James?" You don't say, "Well, I'm a real estate agent here," and they don't care. You could say, "Well, I work for a copier company and we sell equipment all over the country," or "I work for, yeah, I'm a real estate agent." Everybody goes, "Good. I need to go find my wife. They got a cocktail. They're not even married. They just want to get as far away from you as possible." By the way, that's not a cocktail, it's a ginger ale. But in any case, but it was tempting. But be that as it may. So instead of that, if I said to somebody, if you would ask me, Richard, what do you do? I would say, well, I enjoy what I do because my clients say I help them elevate their business performance in today's marketplace. And what's the first thing you go, really? How do you do that? Oh, a little curiosity. Yes, that's a wonderful thing. And everybody can do it. What do you do? Well, I build websites for companies so that they can get greater traffic. Oh, really? How do you do that? I wish we had more traffic. Or, what do you do? Well, I'm in a real estate business. Well, that means nothing. So what do you do? I love what I do because I help people find their dream homes at a price that they can afford. And I found some incredible deals that are going on in the marketplace right now. Really? I heard the market was really hot right now. Well, why don't we have breakfast or lunch one day next week and we have a conversation about what you're looking. You see, you create curiosity in people and people want to engage.
It's kind of interesting when you think of that question, what do you do? And people say, I'm a real estate. It's like, I didn't ask what you are. I ask, what do you do? What's
Amen.
the, yeah, right. So when you say, what do you do? I help people find and buy their dream home for the lowest rate possible. That's what I do. It's the result. And it's just, yeah, it's kind of funny. I just like just popped into my head when you're talking about that. So it's like we get asked the results question, but we give them kind of the
The names.
title.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's funny. So I think that's great. I think people can, you know, find out what you do, or they can, there's someone who listens to this, like really think about what's a way that you can explain what you actually do, like the result that you can actually get for someone based on what you do. And you know, that's what they're really asking. What do you do? I help people get this certain result. I love that. Richard, so you have this book, 100 Proven Ways to Acquire and Keep Clients for Life. 100 ways is a lot. I want to know, what is the key to acquiring and then, more importantly, retaining clients?
Well, it's a wonderful question. And the reason I wrote the book is, having had the privilege of speaking and consulting, you know, I have a large consulting firm, and we consult with everything from NFL teams to fast food restaurants to financial firms, et cetera, real estate firms. And what has occurred to me is the shift in consumer behavior. And the pandemic really raced this to the front. You know, my previous book, The Power of Why, Breaking Out a Competitive Marketplace, that's in 7 languages. It's CEO Reed's bestseller, et cetera. And I wasn't really thinking about writing another book. But as I saw this shift coming, it dawned on me that population has gone in a different direction than the average organization or sales professional. So what does that mean? Acquisition and loyalty, let's call it loyalty or retention, they really need to work in concert, because people are in love with experience. So what are people looking for? There are 4 things. And we interviewed hundreds of people. And of course, in our consulting business, we're doing a lot of branding work. So we're interviewing other companies' customers. And one of the questions I had the team ask, let's find out what motivates people. There are 4 things people are looking for today. They want somebody that is thoughtful. They want to do business with a professional firm that is kind, goes the extra mile. They want somebody that's caring, somebody that cares enough to find out what I really want, stop just trying to sell me something, help me solve something. And then 4th, somebody that's empathetic. So when you think about kindness and caring and thoughtfulness and empathetic, Mark Cuban said one of the greatest things that, and I'm paraphrasing, but basically his point was, one of the most underutilized tools in business is to be kind. If you're kind, it changes the game. People want somebody that's thoughtful. So how are those come together? When you're thoughtful, kind, caring, and empathetic, it establishes a foundation for a relationship. And relationships do what? They drive revenue. So people become delighted advocates. One of the things we see, James, everybody says, well, I got lots of satisfied clients. So what? We know from our work that 20 to 30% of your satisfied clients are loyalty neutral. They will switch. They will switch for a better experience. And many salespeople say, oh, my people wouldn't switch. Then I always ask this question. Okay. Have you brought in any new business this year? Oh, yeah. Who did they have doing business somewhere else? Oh, yeah. I took it away from that other company. I guarantee if we call that other company, they're going to say, I can't imagine why they stopped doing business with us. I thought they were satisfied. You see, satisfied, that's not the goal. You got to turn them into delighted advocates. And you do it by personalizing and humanizing. And when you do that, you can acquire them because you personalize, kind, thoughtful, caring, empathetic. And when you do that, it creates that relationship. Is that helpful?
Yeah. And I just like to unpack it, you know, a little bit more. But what are some ways that someone can show someone that they are kind, thoughtful, empathetic, et cetera?
Okay, I'll give you an example. It's kind of an extreme example, but I think it's one that people can reflect on. A friend of mine, grandson, was tragically killed. All right. He got the 700 people attend the funeral. All kinds of people come up and said, Ken, if there's anything I can do, anything I can do, anything I can do, anything I can do, phone calls, anything I can do. But nobody did anything except for about 6 people. And one person came over and took care of the dog for the week and fed the dog. Their financial advisor drove 6 hours and brought a cases of water and snacks for the house to make a difference. Another couple made sure he had plenty of food in the house for all the guests that were coming and people stopping by. So that was kindness demonstrated. That advisor was very kind. He didn't just say, you know, let me know what I can do for you. Another thing to do, I have a real estate group that I work with that I do coaching for, Keller Williams, and you know who they are, Keller Williams. But in any case, someone would buy a house from them, they'd send them a cake and said, congratulations. So I said, so what do you send? They showed me a picture. It's like, oh, it just says congratulations. Yeah. I said, well, there's no thought into that. That's just to run by the bakery and pick up. I said, why don't you give them a cake with a picture of the house on it and their address and congratulations for your brand new dream home. four posts on the first one they sent out, got three listings and one sale.
Wow.
So there you go. Now, why? They showed what? Personalization and humanization. It's an impact on people. So it's just like if you're, I'll give you another example. I got an email from an advisor in Charlotte, North Carolina. He had asked a similar question on a conversation I had. I said, "Well, where's the parking in your office?" He says, "Across the street." I said, "What do you do when it rains?" "Well, we hope they don't get wet." He said, "You know, sometimes I run across the street with her."
Right.
I said, "Good. Why don't you buy umbrellas and put your brand on it? And everybody comes in, you give them an umbrella." He's given away over 350 umbrellas, $5 each. He said, "It's wonderful though. If it's raining outside, I give them the umbrella and they go." I'll give you one other example. I got a gal in Houston, Texas. She's an attorney. She sent me an email. Oh my God. She heard me speak at a conference about riding the elevator down with people. She's like, "What? I'm too busy. I just take them to the lobby. Thanks for coming and goodbye." And sometimes I'm so busy, I have my assistant walk around. I said, "Get on the elevator, ride down to the lobby with them. They're going to tell you things in that elevator they're never going to tell you in your office." Client comes in, 22 years. She goes to the elevator with that in her mind, rides down. He, didn't have anything really to say in the elevator. She's like, "I'm going to kill Wildman. This is awful." Stuck her hand out, said, "Thank you for coming." He squeezed her hand and said, "You know, as an attorney and as an advisor, you've made me a wealthy man. And I can't tell you this in your office. I'm so intimidated. But I'm coming up and I'm going to be the head of this large charity ball. And I want you and your husband to join me on the dais. And I want to tell everybody the $10 million I'm going to give to that organization is because of you. And everybody in that room needs to move their business to you."
Wow.
Now, that doesn't happen if you dust them off at the elevator.
Right. Yeah, I love, kind of what the underlying thing that I hope the listener can pick up from everything that you're saying is just it's about caring for people. And I feel like so many people, and I'm guilty of this too. I've done it, and it's taken some slaps to the face to realize that I did it and that it was bad. But, thinking about our business and ourselves. And everybody does think about themselves and their business, which is important, of course.
And normal. Yeah.
Right. But like, I always tell people, like, no one cares about your business, really. They care about how your business can help them. If I make a video about how to bench press, if I'm a fitness coach, people are looking up, how can I bench press so I can get stronger, so I can show the guys at the gym that I can do 225, or whatever. And it's the same thing with anything that you teach. They want to get an outcome for their own life to make their life better. And it's really just that leadership kind of mindset and the servant leadership sort of mindset. So I think that's really big and going the extra mile with these different things. And another thing that you mentioned about that person going down the elevator, I think it's so cool that people focus, and I love automations and building a big audience and that sort of stuff and working towards that. It's great because it leads to a ton of opportunity. But it's crazy how a single interaction with someone and a great relationship can just catapult you into a whole new area of your life. And it just takes one person. And people get so fixated on building this big thing and automations and stuff and losing the human touch. But if you focus on one person deeply at a time and focus on depth rather than width, it just takes that one person to be like, I know this person who knows all of these people, and they can introduce you to these other high-level people. And that just catapults your career from one relationship. And I just think it's amazing.
Absolutely right. If you meet strangers every day that could turn into clients every day. And it's how people today are, they're desperate for somebody to care about them, somebody to take an extra minute to be a little bit kind, to be a little bit thoughtful and have empathy. I mean, Sibir Kahar, who's a legendary kindness activist from India, one of the things he said is that people will forget your job title, but they'll never forget your kindness. And that's exactly right. And that's where we are as a society. I mean, look at Chick-fil-A as a classic example. Now, I knew Truett Cathy, so full disclosure, and did work there. Okay, great. Chick-fil-A got it. He's passed away now. Got it. All right. But he always used to tell me, "Richard, we're not in a chicken business. We're in a people business." And you think about what's going on at Chick-fil-A. Okay, they are closed 50, think about this, 52 days a year, every Sunday. That means they're only open, if you think it through, they're only open about 10 and a half months. Fair enough? Got it. All right. So please tell me why they turn more dollars per store than any other fast food chain in the world, including McDonald's, in 10 and a half months. I mean, this is sort of important to maybe get our 11 and a half months. to get our brain around. So if you think about the fact they're open 11 and a half months, or excuse me, 10, let me do the math. They're closed 52 days a year. And then yet they're doing that kind of revenue. The question is why? Well, when you talk to people about Chick-fil-A, they don't talk about the chicken. It's how they're treated. Please, please, my pleasure, and thank you. So that's where we are as a society. Please, my pleasure, and thank you will drive your revenue. Imagine if you take some of the things that are in 100 Proven Ways, which are all anecdotal, specific tips, exactly how to implement them. That's what changes the game for people. Food for thought.
Yeah, I think it's adding that human touch as much as you can and focusing on the depth. That's huge. I am curious, you mentioned before when you were talking about selling Porsches that you excelled in selling the different cars because you focused on people, the relationships, and you also would go to where those people would be hanging out, the clientele, correct?
Right.
And you created curiosity, which we kind of talked about as well. There's this thing in sales that I've learned over the years, and I'm still perfecting it, getting better at it, but it's like how you can turn conversations into that real interest. Curiosity is a big piece of it too. But there's like the whole piece of, if you try and push it too much and you're too aggressive with your energy, even if you're using the right words, then you come off as needy, which is creepy because needy is creepy. So how do you kind of go about, obviously, like talking to the right people is very important. So you went to the events where those people who would be interested in a Porsche would be at. But when you're having these conversations, how do you go about it in kind of that nonchalant way where it's like, I'm here to do business, like you're intentional, but you're not attached to the outcome?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question because, rightly so, we're in love with our product and our platform. I mean, that's one of the reasons we do what we do. If you're a business owner, you started that business because of fill in the blank. You like that space, you like that product, whatever the case, that service you're providing. If you're a dentist, the reason you're a dentist because you don't want to cut people open, you just want to take their teeth out. That's just the way you have to begin to understand how people think. So when you put all that into context, how do you connect with people? Well, get involved in their organizations. That's one thing you can do. And even if it's a one-time meeting, don't go with your automatic business card wrist shooter strapped on. I've been to those meetings, passing out business cards to everybody.
Right.
When you have a conversation, let's say we were there, we'll go back to our earlier point. If I said, and you said to me, what do you do? And I said, well, I really enjoy helping. What do you do? I enjoy helping my clients elevate their business performance. And then you might say, oh, how do you do that? I'd say, well, let's have breakfast and lunch. We'd love to have a conversation with you. By the way, James, how long have you been involved in this association? I'm not going to ask you what you do. I want to start a conversation. I want to get your story going. And I'll tell you what's going on in our country. People have tremendous stories to tell, but nobody's interested in hearing them. When you get someone to talk about their story, so how long have you lived in there? How many children do you have? It's just like when you see a client for the next time and you go, well, how are you doing there, James? And what's James going to say? Fine.
Right.
Fine. Yeah, how are you doing? Good. Pretty good. Not bad. Okay. I spoke in Buffalo last week, big crowd, and I had a guy in the front row, and I was speaking on this point in the Q&A. And I just said to him, how are you doing there, young man? He's fine. I said, well, let me ask you, what are you most excited about when the snow melts up here? He said, well, let me tell you, it was great. He said, we're really excited. We're going to pull in the backyard. It's going to be great. The kids are going to be so excited. And we're going to take a trip to Northern Canada too because they want to see bears. Well, that's a lot better than fine.
Right.
And he started to tell his story. And then other people, I said, anybody else excited about bears? And people start raising their hand. So what happened? Now you become the engager, the person bringing in a conversation. I'll give you another quick point. If you're doing a dinner party or you're doing an event or you're at a table and maybe it's an association meeting and you're having a lunch and you know what always gets boring, everything slows down at the entree, put together four or five little questions like, what's your favorite thing to do for the holidays? What's the one thing you always wanted to do on vacation and never did? What's the craziest thing you ever did in college? On a slip of paper. And then you get two or three people, just say, hey, take a piece of paper and then answer the question. And it's crazy. And people say, God, I love being with you, James. This was great. I'll tell you, what are you guys doing? I'd love to have you over meet the family, or I'd like to take you to golf. Why? Because you're creating a way for people to what? Relate. And it costs nothing. That's the best part. Nothing, which was, like good.
Yeah. And then when they start to ask you, because eventually, you're pouring into them, they're like, I've been talking about myself so much. What do you do?
Well, I love what I do because my clients say I help them elevate their business performance. But you know, James, before we get to all of that, tell me how you started your business.
Right.
See what I just did there? I gave you back the power.
Yeah.
So before we get to all of that, tell me how you started your business. Well, that's a long story, but let me tell you. And then they give you the story. Well, golly, think about it. Even when I did that, when I was in the Rolls-Royce business, people would call me on the phone. We do it over the phone, and you know, what have you got in stock, et cetera. And I said, well, why do you want Seychelles blues over pewter? Well, I'll tell you. And then they tell me why they wanted that color. Well, why is that meaningful for you? Well, my wife, her eyes are Seychelles blue, and I always wanted to have. Or my husband loves a red interior, so I told him that the next one we'd get, I would acquiesce. Instead of getting a black interior, we get a red interior. Great. Now, what are some of your other favorite colors? And the next thing you know, I'm hearing about their house and I'm hearing about their vacations. And then at the end, it was like this. So, okay, so what do you have in stock? They're not going to buy from anybody else. We're
Right.
establishing what? A caring,
Rapport.
rapport. We're
Yeah.
having a conversation, not a presentation. Can I
So,
give you one more?
yeah, go for it. No, go for it.
Real quick. Young guy that I know from the Carolinas, he has his client is in Baltimore. Okay, great. A woman, she refers him to her brother in another state, Texas, and said, you should meet with him when you're out there. So he was out there at a conference I was speaking at, and he was going to join me at that conference. And here he is in the lobby meeting the brother of the woman, his client in Baltimore. Okay. The brother, the prospect, says, okay, what's your pitch? So he said to the kid, he said, oh, I don't have a pitch. I just wanted to find out how you got in the automotive business. The guy talked for an hour, 45 minutes, gave him the whole story, said, you know, I really like you. My advisor, all he's trying to do is sell me stuff. He said, you need to come over to the house. We're going to sit down. I'm going to all my paperwork and help me get my financial life in balance. And I've got 16 dealers that are in my district, and I want to introduce you to all of them. Now, why did that happen? Because he didn't have a deck. He had a desire to do what? Personalize and humanize the conversation.
Right.
That's all in the book, all those types of stories, if that's
So,
helpful.
no, it's super helpful, and I think it's a really important point for people to think about. The only question that I think about, because I know that someone's going to be thinking about this, is like, okay, well, how do you kind of get to the point where it's like, yes, we want to focus on people and humanize, and we want to grow our business at the same time and close more deals. So, if we're just focusing on them, I'm sure people have had a conversation that just kind of ends, and they're like, all right, see you later. But how do we get it to where it actually leads to a transaction eventually. Obviously we want to make it about them, but then they still do need to know about what we do at the same time. So what's kind of the transition there?
Yeah. Okay. So first things first, you want to build what? You want to show people that you care. Secondly, you want to build emotional security with them. This is what's missing in most sales. It's all about economic security. Well, the bottom line is in this environment, it's about emotion first, because if I'm emotionally secure, I'm interested in the economic side. So build emotional security, we've talked about. Now, the economic side. Let's say we're having this conversation, and you ask me what I love helping my clients say to help them get elevate their business performance. And then you would say, interesting, how do you do that? And I'd say, well, you know, we do a variety of different things. And then I'd ask you a question about your business. I'd say, how long have you started your business? Tell me a little more. And you would. And then at some point, I'm going to stop and say, as I said, I love what I do because I help clients elevate their business performance. Now, remember these words, folks. This is the most powerful words for transition. And we know this because we've coached thousands of people to do it in this. I've got so many hundreds and hundreds of emails with these eight little words. So I said, you know, as I said, and we help people elevate their business performance. But before we get to all of that, when you say, but before we get to all of that, what happens? I'm going to say, what are three things you want to make sure that we discuss today? Or what are three reasons why you're looking for a new Lexus? Or what are three things you're looking for in a new home? Or what are three things you're looking for now that you're considering another doctor? Or what are three things you're looking for? The point is, go for discovery at that point, because at that point, you've built enough, I'll use your word, rapport, another word, emotional security, that people want to tell you.
Right.
I mean, I was with a guy the other night, and he came to me and he said, Richard, it was unbelievable. I did that before we get to. And the guy said, you know, you're so kind and so thoughtful. He said, I've never told anybody this. And then he tells them, which was, like good.
Right.
So when you think about, before we get to all of that, those few little words together, that sets it up. But before we get all about me, What are you really trying to look for in a new home? Back to when
Right.
Lexus first came to this country, a lot of people don't like it when I say it. Lexus is really a Toyota. You go to Japan, they don't have Lexus, they have Toyotas. And that's a grand, called a grand something, but it's the big boy. Anyway, when they first came to this country, you know how they sold them? You walked in the dealership, first thing you said, "Well, James, why do you want to buy a Lexus?" "Well, I heard they were safe, you know, and they're good, mom, they're calm. Great. Who do you want to buy it for?" "Well, I bought it for my daughter." After that, the only question is, what color do you want? Because you told your story. You get people to tell you, why do they want to buy a copier? Why do they want a new house? Why are they looking for new office space? Why do they need a new roof? I'm sorry, they're thinking about putting a pool in. For what reason? Well, we got a lot of grandkids. How many you got? Eight. Oh, I see. So you don't want a lap pool, right? No, we don't want a lap pool. You see, when you focus on them and ask them what they're looking for, and it's usually not one thing. We always say, what are three things? I'll give you a little tip we've learned over the years, and I talked about it in my last book too, The Power of Why: Breaking Out in a Competitive Marketplace. The third thing they say is the one they normally don't talk about, but it's almost always the one they buy on.
The
And you're
third
the
one.
one who knows it. Yeah, you're the only
Interesting.
one that knows it. It's crazy.
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah. I love
But
that, man.
we've tested that in focus groups, and if people go like this, well, I didn't want to tell you. I mean, you know that's the mother lode.
Yeah. Yeah. Building rapport. I have my own coach who teaches me about, enrollment and sales and stuff. So I've learned a lot from him, and he is like huge on the rapport, because a lot of sales conversations, they talk, it's like a pyramid, and rapport is typically at the top, and it's like this really small thing. It's kind of like, yeah, just kind of get that out of the way. He's like, flip the pyramid upside
Flip it
down
around.
and
Yes.
then maintain it throughout the whole thing. Because, especially when you get to the real like personal questions, or I mean, people are going to share with you as much as they're comfortable sharing. And if you
Right.
and I are best friends, you trust me. If we've known each other for years, it's like I am your best friend for as long as you can remember. You'll tell me anything because you trust me and you know that I have your best interests at heart. And it's like I'm gonna tell you what's real, and we have that rapport and that trust. So the key is to build that, because the more you can do that, the more they're willing to actually share. And people think that salespeople are liars, but people lie to salespeople all the time, like the customers. So yeah, it's really comes down to that. And that's all like the relationship aspects of what you've been talking about. And then people are much more open to what you have to say and share.
Well, relationships drive revenue. I mean, and
Yeah, I love
more
that.
so now than ever before.
Right.
Before the pandemic, about two-thirds of the population belonged to something. Now it's over almost 90%, 87% last poll I saw.
Yeah.
Well, they want to be with people that are like-minded. They want to work with people in their network. It's just a great opportunity time to be an entrepreneur, but you got to focus on people. We know you love the product. What you got to do is get the people to love the product. And the way to do that is build a relationship with them where they see you as somebody that's empathetic, that's kind and caring and thoughtful. And if you are that, they're interested in finding out how you can solve their problem.
Right.
Stephen Covey said it really well years ago. And it was one of those points he made, and people didn't even hear it.
Yeah.
And he just said, if you demonstrate empathy, defense goes down, acceptance of new solutions go up. I paraphrased, but that's my point.
Yeah.
And he was exactly, and it was kind of like one of those, yeah, okay, good. So let's move on to how I can, what's another habit I need to adopt?
Right. Everyone's like, oh.
Got it. Okay, good. Next. But as it turns out, that's the core truth in the whole book, is the more empathetic you are, the less defensive people are. And I would suggest to anybody who's building a business here as an entrepreneur or salesperson, the last thing you want is people to be defensive. What you want them to feel like is you're on their side of the table. Boy, if they feel you're on your side of their side of the table, they can't wait to have a conversation with you.
Right. Yeah. Awesome stuff. Richard, based on your career as an entrepreneur, as a whole, what's something that you wish someone would have told you early on?
Interesting question. I would say, I think how important it is to focus on the types of, I'll say in this case, people with whom that you can do business with. And I use a little acronym. Can I do this for you? That might be helpful.
Yeah.
I think the thing I would say to every entrepreneur is ask your dear friend James before you do anything in marketing. And the first J is, can you join the organization where all of your prospects are? A, do you have an affinity to those people? Or you're just going after them because they got money and they live in the right neighborhood. But if you got invited to dinner, you'd be like crawling in your skin. Or you want to work, you know, with people in the horse business, but you're afraid of horses. That's a problem. M, think about it. Do they have the, if you think about joining, A, do you have an affinity? M, do they meet often enough that you can really get involved? Join the membership committee. Don't join the membership committee. Support them. Go to meetings, go to conferences, go to everything. Get to be a face. Join the, you know, work the welcoming committee. In 3 months, everybody's going to know you. You're going to know everybody. You don't go with your automatic business card issued around, but you get disability. That costs nothing. All right. So that's the M. Then E, is it economically viable? Can they afford to put a roof on all these houses? If they can't, maybe it's a bad move for you. If there are people that are in a different income stream than you want, then don't. And then S, is it big enough? Is it 250, 350, 450, 500,000 people? Great. You got a market for as long as you want to run that market, because when those people come, delighted advocates, they're going to tell everybody. And your market's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, because you got a group of people out there marching in the streets saying, these people are good. These people are good. These people are. And when you get that, you get name recognition. When you get name recognition, then the only question is, how hard do you want to run?
Right.
So just think about James. Worked out your name's James. But it popped in my head when you asked me that. I always ask about James. Can I join? Do I have an affinity? Do you meet often enough? Economically viable? Is it big enough? Or am I really wasting my time here?
Hmm.
See?
Yeah. That's awesome. Love it, Richard. Well, we're going to come in for a landing right now. Sure. That was really impressive, I just have to say, using my name. But where can people learn more about you and get connected?
Okay, two things. You can go to Richard Weilman, W-E-Y-L-M-A-N. Richard Weilman, WEYLMAN.com. In fact, I have at the top, I've got a, you can click on the homepage, you'll see it. Two things you can click on. One is I've just posted 7 easy and elegant ways to turn strangers into clients. It's free. Just click it and download it. I just want to make that as a gift for your listeners.
Awesome.
All right. And your viewers. Secondly, my book, my current book, will be out March 12th. 100 proven ways to acquire and keep clients for life. Just click on learn more. It's on the front. You'll see it. It'll take you, it'll show you some of the people, the influencers that have already read portions of the book. It'll take you to a page to give you more detail, et cetera. The most important thing, and you know, everybody says, hi, I mean, you know, James, I mean, the pre-sales numbers have been, they look like they're a record, but I don't care about all that. I just want you to win. So just go there and get on the site. You can go over to resources and drop down to the video tab. I just put up about 30 videos, 2-minute vignettes on various ways you can connect with your clients and your customers and build relationships. So you can go watch them. They're free. Just click on them and enjoy them. I don't need that. I just want you to win. I've been very blessed to work with wonderful companies and wonderful people that have taught me a great deal in our consulting business. And I just put that together in a book and said, here you go.
That's awesome.
RichardWeilman.com, 100 proven ways to acquire and keep clients for life. And everybody's selling it. Barnes and Noble, they're in a bidding war. Who's going to discount it to get the most sales, I guess, but it's all cool. All of them got it. All of, you know, major bookstores have it online. And it'll be in bookstores March 12th. And Amazon, I got a note from Amazon and Barnes and Noble. They're shipping on March 12th. So people overnight. So people have it on the 13th, which is
cool.
Great.
Beautiful.
And there'll be, you know, what is that other Kindle, you know, all the other stuff, the Kindle. And, no, I'm not going back to the studio and record it. They can do that, but it's
for sure. Cool. Right on, Richard. Well, thank you so much for the time. For the listener, we covered quite a bit about sales, but I think that the, you know, about acquiring and retaining clients, I think the biggest takeaway, the underlying thread is just to care about your people, empathy, kindness, being a good human being and going above and beyond, because most people aren't willing to do that. So if you do, you stand above the rest. And just remember, it just takes one great relationship to totally change your career. Because like Richard shared in his examples, the person went above and beyond. The person they were talking to was like, I want you to come present here, or I want to introduce you to all these other people who are your perfect clients. And because they referred you, that's going to lead to a ton of business. So it's just wild how one connection can change everything. And I hope this episode was inspiring. I know it was for me. The biggest thing though, is that you do something with this. Implementation is your only superpower. So take what you learned here, get out there, make something happen. And we will see you in the next one.